You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Then we see Melanie saying, packing for the move, that is, and then asked to be, will you clear me?
Correct.
So still on the 10th, as we get to 6:47, we have Lori telling Melanie, sure, I'll work on you now. Do you want to come over for a blessing?
Correct.
And this is where we then see Melanie ask, sure, I can, but is Charles coming? Is Al there? Right? And so Lori lets her know that Al is here at 7:18 p.m. on July 10th, right?
Correct.
And Charles says he will come over in the morning.
Yes.
So at 7:18, everyone sort of knows Al is over at Lori's. Charles isn't there. He'll be over the next morning.
Correct.
And then we see Melanie say, I'll head over, right?
Correct.
This next message is from the 11th, correct?
Yes.
And we see her tell Lori again, Zach is here, right?
Correct.
And again, now it's closer to 8. He just acted like he was coming over to get his mail. He told Brandon, oh, hey, Adam's in town. And Brandon acted like he didn't know. I asked if he was moving in with Adam Cannon, and he said he doesn't know yet. And then do they confirm after that, I can fly out at 9 p.m. tonight and be back Saturday afternoon?
Correct. And those two prior messages, so you can see the time frame of 7:48, obviously the event has taken place, and they're not read until 1:38 in the afternoon.
Okay. So, yes. So, this is at the 7:53 a.m. when this is sent. That is after Lori Vallow has left the house with Charles's phone in his car?
Correct.
And it's read at 1:28 after Lori Vallow has been interviewed and released back in Charles Vallow's SUV?
Yes.
And they go over to Alex's house?
Correct.
When you're trying to put this case together, you're having to pull all these different text messages to see when Lori knew what she knew and who she was directing to do things, correct?
Correct.
As you were looking through these messages, were you also having to figure out who some of these people were?
Yes, I was.
We had talked about that phone number, the 515 number that was listed as a contact of Bubby. Do you
Yes.
recall that?
Yes.
And that you, through looking at the iCloud account, the text messages, the call that was made by Chad Daybell using this phone and recorded, that Bubby contact name is Chad Daybell.
Correct.
When you were reviewing those iCloud accounts, does every text message always save in them?
They do not, no.
So did you also have to look at phone records to see if those matched up or if there were missing records?
I did.
And we talked about, obviously, phone calls are not saved in the iCloud account, right?
Correct.
So when you were looking at those Chad Daybell phone records, did you look to see on the morning of July 11th of 2019 if there were any text messages or phone calls made between Chad Daybell's Bubby phone and Lori Vallow?
I did.
Do those records show a text message from Chad Daybell's phone to Lori Vallow's phone on July 11th of 2019 at 6:06 a.m.?
Yes.
And those are all in the records that we've previously admitted?
Correct.
Was there another text message from Lori Vallow's safe cell phone to Chad Daybell's phone on July 11th at 6:12 a.m.?
Yes.
Was there a text message from Chad Daybell's phone to Lori Vallow's phone at 7:01 a.m.?
Correct.
And another text message from Chad Daybell's phone to Lori Vallow's phone at 7:33 a.m.?
Yes.
So those phone records don't show us the content of those.
No, it just shows that the message they were communicating, but her iCloud will not show the actual content of those.
Okay. Looking still at that Exhibit 223, as well as Exhibit 223, which is the 515 number associated with Chad Daybell, and looking at the T-Mobile records for Lori Vallow, Exhibit 220, did you look at those two records to see if there was any calls or text messages between Chad Daybell's phone and Lori Vallow's phone after Charles was shot on
Yes.
July 11th?
Yes.
Was there a phone call between those two phones, Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow, on July 11th at 12:39 p.m.?
Yes, there was.
That lasted about a minute and 45 seconds?
Correct.
So that would have been after Lori Vallow was interviewed by the police and brought back to the residence.
Correct.
Was there no other phone call on July 11th of 2019 from Chad Daybell's phone to Lori Vallow's phone at 2:28 p.m. that lasted a little over 11 minutes?
Yes.
Is that around the time that Detective Enclan was calling Lori to have her come back to 5531 South Four Peaks?
Yes, it was.
Did you see another call between Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell at 5:42 p.m. that lasted for over 30 minutes?
I did.
And did you see another call between Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow on July 11th of 2019 at 7 p.m. that lasted approximately 11 minutes?
Yes.
And did you see a final call on July 11th between Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow at 7:54 p.m. that lasted a little over 13 minutes?
I did.
When you were looking at the text messages between Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell, or contact named Bubby, that you located in those Lolly Time at iCloud account, did you notice a romantic relationship between them?
Yes, I did.
Prior to Charles being shot and killed on July 11th of 2019, did you see any open and obvious romantic messages from Chad under any of his contact names that you knew of to Lori Vallow?
I did not.
After Charles's death on July 11th of 2019, did you see any open and obvious romantic messages from Chad Daybell under any of his contact names to Lori Vallow?
I did.
Now, were there many messages and between Lori Vallow and contact name Bubby or Chad Daybell?
Yes, there were.
And again, those are all part of that, recovered as part of the search warrant on the Lolly Time at iCloud account.
Yes.
In these text messages, did Chad write I'll call it romantic story about Lori and himself that he texted and emailed to her?
He did.
Did he have other names for them?
I believe the names were James and Elena.
Did that story seem to sort of at least match the timing of when they met?
It did.
Were some of them more promiscuous?
Yes.
Did they also include conversations, though, about people like Adam and Brandon?
They did.
And about Ned?
Yes.
My paralegal can approach with 229. Your Honor, may the state will move to admit exhibit 229.
Any objection?
Just relevance to the conspiracy, Your Honor.
All right. The proper foundation's been made. I will admit 229.
229.
229 is admitted.
So we've talked about Adam and Brandon, correct?
Yes.
And so one of the first message in this exhibit 229 is from July 13th, so 2 days after Charles was shot and killed?
Yes.
And do we see, at this point, Chad is asking Lori, how did Adam and Brandon find out?
Correct.
And again, on the 13th, at 9:51, we see Lori telling Chad, my mom, because she was so mad, she went off on Adam.
Correct.
And again, when we go back to Adam's testimony, did he indicate he learned Charles had died on the 13th?
Correct.
And that he got in a fight with his mom?
Yes.
At that point, do we see then a message from Chad asking, did he have much to say in his defense?
Correct.
And Lori responds, he was very defensive and tried to justify everything, but my mom kicked him out and said she would never talk to him again. She's dramatic.
Yes.
So we had learned that Adam had been speaking with Charles and that he hadn't told his family about this intervention, right?
Correct.
And that after this, he said he lost basically all contact with his family.
Yes.
And this seems to sort of confer with that.
Correct.
Do we then see a switch over from talking about Lori's family to now Chad talking to Lori about being deeply, crazily, madly in love with Lily?
Yes.
And do we see, again, messages to and from Lori and Chad talking about sort of their love for each other?
Correct.
So prior to this, you really had not seen this open, obvious discussions about their relationship?
I had not.
As the time continued, did you continue to see, again, messages of love as well as a lot of calls?
I did.
Although we won't read through everything here, is this sort of part of that story you're talking about of James and Elena starting in November?
Correct.
And is November when the Preparing the People conference was here in Arizona? Of 2018?
Correct.
And we've heard testimony from witnesses that Chad Daybell was there.
Yes.
And you found actually a recording on the Lori for Style of Chad Daybell at the Preparing the People conference in November of 2018.
I did.
As we get to July 14th, do we see Chad then talking about cleansing the Houston house? Clearing the Houston house, sorry. To remove the darkness he caused.
Correct.
So who was living in Houston?
Charles.
And had you seen and heard people testify that Charles was considered dark by Lori Vallow?
Yes.
And again, we continue to see the affirmations of love.
Yes.
The cheek to cheek and loin to loin.
Yes.
Okay. Again, more conversations, both of love and text messages as well as phone calls?
Correct.
As we continue on the 14th, did Chad, let me ask you this, where was Chad Daybell living in July of 2019?
In Idaho.
So Chad is living in Idaho, and you told us that you had seen flights of Lori to Idaho and Lori and Chad to Arizona in March of 2019?
Yes.
He's asking, Lori, did everything go smoothly in ending the hotel stay and getting the car returned?
Correct.
And so we see Lori responding to him, I guess I turned in the car, but I don't know what the police did at the hotel, probably just left it?
Correct.
And so we know that the police got the key card from her and went and cleared out the hotel room?
Yes.
Do we see, again, a continuation of that story that Chad was writing to Lori Vallow?
You do.
And that continues through most of this till apparently Chad needed a shower.
Correct.
Now, as we again continue through this, are you seeing sort of every day multiple texts of love between these two?
I am, yes.
And again, going through the 17th, 16th, 17th, again, more affirmations of love, correct?
Yes.
Now, we know on the 15th of July is when Lori Vallow had called Banner Life Insurance to indicate that she was the beneficiary, right?
Correct.
And on the 18th is when she learned that she was not.
Correct.
So in Exhibit 229, do we see on July 18th at 12:18 Arizona time? So I talked to the insurance company. He changed it in March. So it was probably Ned before we got rid of him. They can't tell me who to tell me to whom, of course, but it's done. I'll still get the $4,000 a month from Social Security?
Yes.
So on July 18th, after she talks with Banner Life Insurance, Lori tells Chad she's not getting the life insurance.
Correct.
But she tells him she's getting $4,000 a month from Social Security?
Correct.
Now, we know from Lori Vallow's texts to Alex that she went to Social Security on August 12th, correct?
Yes.
And we also had testimony from Social Security about that.
Correct.
But here it is on July 18th of 2018, and she already knows she's going to get money from Social Security.
Correct.
Again, do you see a lot of additional continuing everyday multiple affirmations of their relationship?
I do.
And this email or this report just went through the July 18th where we have that message about the Social Security.
Yes.
Did those affirmations continue on after
yes,
that?
Yes, they did.
So now that Charles is dead, there's a very open texting and calling relationship between Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell.
Yes.
Now, we had indicated that there were multiple contact names that were associated in the Lolly Time iCloud account to Chad Daybell.
Yes.
While you were looking at these text messages in the Lolly Time iCloud account, did you locate any for a contact name Melanie 2 with the number 2?
I did.
And in reviewing those messages, did you identify them as coming from Chad Daybell as well?
Yes, the number linked to that contact of Melanie 2 was for Chad Daybell.
Did you even see a message from Melanie 2 with an attached photo showing Chad Daybell?
Correct.
And were all those, not all of them, were there a substantial number of those messages between Melanie 2 and Lori Vallow the same sort of romantic discussions that you saw between contact name Bubby
yes.
and Lori?
Yes.
When you were looking at the conversation between Chad Daybell as the Bubby contact, we saw a discussion about life insurance, correct?
Correct.
Did you also see a conversation between Lori and Melanie 2, aka Chad, about life insurance?
I did.
If I can have my paralegal approach with 288 and 230. Looking at 288 and 230, are those both one of the messages that is from Melanie 2, contact name, to Lori Vallow that was an had an attached photo of Chad Daybell and another individual?
Yes.
Was that some of the information used to verify that this Melanie 2 was in fact Chad Daybell?
It was.
And then in 230, is that some of the SMS messages showing both that same romantic relationship as well as that conversation about the life insurance?
Correct.
State will move to admit 288 and 230.
Any objection?
Just the relevance, Your Honor.
288 and 230 are admitted.
So starting with 288, was this, again, a message, an MMS, so meaning there's an attached photo with it, right?
Correct.
That occurred on July 17th of 2019 from Melanie 2 contact name. And it said, I took a photo with Alan Osman for Mark.
Correct.
And when we looked at the photo, did you ever learn what Chad Daybell looked like?
I do know what he looks like, yes.
Is that Chad Daybell?
Yes, it is.
So this is the person that she has been texting all the romantic love affirmations with right after Charles died.
Yes.
230. Again, we see the same sort of romantic contact between them.
Correct.
And so this is, again, July 18th now going on with another contact name for Chad Daybell in Lori's phone?
Yes.
And again, we see it's the Lolly Time iCloud account, right?
Correct.
When we get to July 18th, this one, though, is an earlier. For the Bubby one, we saw that it was a noon time message, right?
Right.
And so we learned that Lori received a email indicating she was not the beneficiary, and later she had a phone conversation.
Correct.
Does this one appear to be sort of the earlier one, because it references, I just got the letter from the insurance company saying that I'm not the beneficiary. It's a spear through my heart. Who do you think he changed it to? Brandon or probably Kay? He left nothing for JJ.
Correct.
Did that conversation go on? Wow, that's terrible. There's no way to find out.
It did.
And did Lori then tell Chad, I might be able to see when I get his computer on Sunday. I could check the email sent to the insurance company. It will show change of beneficiary. He must have done it recently.
Correct.
So we had seen, in fact, photos what appeared to be from a computer that were sent to Chad Daybell, correct?
Correct.
Showing that beneficiary change.
Yes.
So does that seem to match with, again, what Lori's telling Chad here about finding out who got that money?
It does.
Does Chad then say, it seems you would have to agree to change. Maybe the name was forged. You should have a good paper trail to prove it, right?
Correct.
So he's trying to help her figure out how to get that money. So you then go on to say, I love you. This is terrible. It's probably another step in bringing down, what is this?
A gadianton.
Did you ever learn what that was?
I'm sure I researched it, but off the top of my head, I don't know what it is.
Okay. Did Lori then tell him, nope, he can change it anytime he wants. He's the agent, and anyone can change the beneficiary anytime with their own signature. I'm thinking it must be Kay.
Correct.
So she understood, at least to Chad, that Charles had that right.
Yes.
Does Chad then say, it will be interesting if he got changed after he had two bullets in his chest.
Correct.
And she goes on to respond, I don't think it could have. You can't change it after the death date. They would review that.
Correct.
And then she goes on to say again, I'm thinking Kay as well. Or he says, I'm thinking Kay as well. She probably freaking out that you got those computers. I'm going to shower and give you a blessing. I'm eager to get home so we can talk. It will be okay, my love. You are wonderful.
Correct.
And then she says, miss you so much. And he responds, miss you the most.
Yes.
So during this conversation, we see Chad and Lori discussing who this likely would have gone to and when it could have been changed, right?
Yes.
And that all occurred before the second conversation we see, also on the 18th, but closer to, I think, 1230, 1234, where she knows now it was changed in March.
Correct.
And in that, we see Chad referring to the two shots to the chest, right?
Yes.
So again, we know they've been talking about this. Did you see any other text messages talking about that?
I did not.
But we saw lots of phone calls between the two on the 11th.
Sure.
Now, as we have been talking through this conversation and much of this trial, we have referred to the defendant as Lori Vallow.
Correct.
And that's because she was married to Charles Vallow when he was shot on July 11th of 2019, right?
Yes.
During your review of those lolly time at iCloud account, did you find evidence of when she became Lori Daybell?
I did.
Did you see a contract for the wedding?
I did.
Did you see wedding photos?
I did.
Where was that wedding?
Hawaii.
Thank you. I can have my paralegal approach with 233. Looking at Exhibit 233, is that the report as well as the actual document that was in the lolitime at iCloud.com account that you reviewed, that the police obtained through a search warrant relating to when Lori Vallow became Lori Daybell?
Correct.
State will move to admit 233.
Any objection?
Relevance.
233 is admitted.
So the first part of this, we see that, again, it notes that this is an image that was from the account, from the Lolitom iCloud account from 10/31, correct? And then this is the actual photograph that was uploaded into the iCloud account, correct?
Correct.
So we see Chad Daybell and Lori Ryan. Was Lori Ryan a prior name of Lori Vallow?
Yes.
That was Tylee Ryan's dad?
Correct.
So she used the Lori Ryan name in this. They use a home address of Rexburg, Idaho at that point?
Correct.
And then the date of the actual wedding is that November 5th of 2019.
Yes, it is.
So 4 months after Charles Vallow is shot and killed inside of the defendant's home, she has remarried to the man, Chad Daybell?
Yes.
I have no other questions for this witness.
Cross.
Detective Duncan, when did you become the case agent?
I believe it was June of 2020.
Okay. And prior to you being the case agent, it was Detective Moffitt?
Moffitt, yes.
Is that correct? And was it because he got promoted that they made you the case agent over this case?
Yes. Or?
Okay. And he's now a lieutenant, is that correct?
Yes, he is.
Okay. And so he was the case, was there anyone in between? Was he the case agent the whole time until 2020 when you took over?
Correct.
Okay. And when you took over the case, what things did you do differently?
I wouldn't say differently. I continued what I was doing. I was looking at records for him. The records in this case, as you are, there's volumes of records. So continued to look at all of the independent iCloud records, call detail records, phone extractions, and also kind of reviewing what he had done prior to my assignment is what I'd done.
Right, so kind of reviewing and seeing what you need to look at.
Correct.
So is this, from what I was understanding what you were saying earlier, is this, you weren't really involved in the case since July 11th and now you're back involved in the case?
So July 11th, obviously, I was there at the house.
Right.
Shortly after that, I had another homicide and my time was occupied with that. And it was several months later that I offered to help look at records because they were so much. And I'd always done that kind of in the background, but never really took a deep dive into them until that June 2020.
Okay. But you were kind of involved, so you kind of knew what was going on in the investigation during those...
Somewhat.
During that time, that year in between,
yes, yeah.
Before you became the case agent.
Correct.
But not totally deep dive, but you kind of knew what was going on.
I understood it.
Okay.
Yes.
That's good. So let's go over that day again real quick. When you were there, what time were you there at the scene from when to when?
I believe I arrived shortly after 9:15.
Okay.
And I would have left probably 4:30.
Okay. Were you at the house that whole time?
Yes.
So well, you didn't...
Let me back up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I did leave for a short period of time to obtain a saw that we would need to cut that piece of flooring out and the baseboard.
Okay.
But then it came back, yes.
So you were at the scene that whole time, besides the time you went to get the saw?
Correct.
You didn't come... You didn't go to the Chandler Police Department?
No.
So you weren't there during our interviews?
No.
Okay. So... And you had mentioned something about you couldn't go in. I was confused. You couldn't go in until after the search warrant, but you were in before that, right?
No. So obviously your first responders, your police officers, the firefighters, they're going in to preserve life and treat the victim in this case. Then they back out. At that point, we will not let anybody in, given the circumstances of this case, until the search warrant is actually signed and executed. So we will wait outside the threshold of the house until that search warrant is signed, and then we will begin our investigation.
So I'm still confused. So you didn't go into the house until after the search warrant, or you did get to go in beforehand?
No, I didn't go in before. I waited until after the search warrant.
Okay. So you had testified... I'm still confused, sorry.
I'm going to object again to the defendant testifying.
Just ask the question.
You had also indicated that you had gone in and that Charles was on the floor. Is that correct?
I think the question was asked of me is, what did I see when I went in? And so that, and I would say after the search warrant we went in, that's what I saw.
But he was already gone in the ambulance at that point?
He never went in an ambulance.
Charles didn't go in the ambulance?
No, he went with the medical examiner's office.
So what time did he leave?
I can't give you a specific time on that. I have to look at the medical examiner's office information for that.
But it was after you entered at 11:50?
It was way after that.
Okay. So then when you entered, what did you do at that point? Can you kind of walk me through that?
Yeah, so when I entered, obviously I made my general observations about what I saw in that room and of the body. And then talked with Detective Coons about what needed to be done next.
And what did you guys do next?
So we came up with a game plan as far as how to process the scene, which direction, who was going to do what. Like I indicated, I was tasked with collecting that firearm and was also tasked with kind of looking through the house for any kind of blood evidence that might be present. The other task that I had when we were ready, I contacted the medical examiner's office to report the death to them.
What time about was that call, do you think?
I do not know.
But sometime... In between that, before 4:30, is that correct?
Correct.
And did everyone leave the scene at 4:30? Is that kind of the timing when people were clearing out? Or?
Yeah, some might have stayed behind, and a lot of our ID techs like to sit in their cars and type their notes, that type of thing. But right around that 4:30, 4:45 is when the search warrant was completed.
Okay. And then there had been a walkthrough, is that correct?
Yes.
And so Alex had come back to the house just after 3-ish?
I believe that could have been the time, yes.
Okay. And then who, were you present during the walkthrough?
I was.
And who else was present?
Detective Moffitt, Detective Werther, Detective Coons, myself, and I want to say crime scene technician Jordan might have been there as well.
Okay. And was it Jordan that was wearing a body cam? Was there a body cam made of that?
No, I believe that Detective Werther had a body cam, but it malfunctioned and didn't capture.
So there's no recording of that at all?
No.
And And Detective Moffitt was the case agent at that point, right? Because he had been assigned that already?
Yes.
Okay. And so did each of you write reports on that walkthrough then, since there was no recording of it?
That would have all been included in our original, in our report, not a specific walkthrough report, but in our original narrative, yes.
Everyone would talk about it, mention it, their perspective?
Not everybody has to, as long as somebody or one or two people wrote about it to know that it happened.
Yeah. Right. So since there's no recording of it, though, someone is assigned, like, because Moffitt is the case agent, or who would do that, be assigned to include it in the report, for sure?
It's just, it's different. I'll give you the example. If you look at probably my report compared to Detective Kuhn's report, you might notice, you know, similarities in there. You might notice stuff that I went into more detail on, or he went into more detail. But it just, it depends on whether they write it or not. They could just put something as simple, I was present during a walkthrough.
Okay. So since you became the case agent, have you read all the reports?
At one time or another, yes, I have.
So is there anyone specific that kind of ran through what happened at the walkthrough?
Your Honor, I object to asked and answered and relevance
sustained
and hearsay.
Sustained as to asked and answered.
Did you write about it in your report?
I'm going to object again to relevance, hearsay, asked and answered.
Sustained as to asked and answered. He already answered that.
You mentioned that it was Detective Werther who had the body cam, is that correct?
Again, asked and answered.
So,
sustained.
Did you read his report?
I have read his report, yes.
And did he mention the walkthrough and what happened?
And I'm going to object again to relevance, hearsay, and asked and answered.
To the extent that it would call for a hearsay answer, I'll sustain the objection.
Detective, when you became the case agent, you were kind of aware, so you knew what had been done in the investigation, is that correct?
Yes.
And so you knew who had been interviewed, is that correct?
Yes.
And you knew what had been tested or not tested at that point?
Correct.
So the bat was tested for fingerprints, we learned that in the testimony, is that correct?
Correct.
And the results were inconclusive.
Correct.
And so there were no latent prints were identified. That's correct.
Correct.
And there were prints, but we just don't know whose they were. Is that accurate?
Sounds about right, yes.
Now we learned that the bat was swabbed for DNA and sent to the lab. Is that correct?
Yes.
And was that ever tested?
No, it was not.
And why not?
When making this decision, you have to look at the probative value of that and what that would show or what a test would prove. DNA and fingerprints are not time specific. That bat was owned by Tylee, to our knowledge. It was in a household where you lived. It was in a household where Alex was. And at one point, based on the fact of when we understood the bat to have been purchased, Charles was living in the house as well. So that bat was accessible to all those people. So if at one point during that time that person touched that bat, all that it would be saying is that somebody touched that bat at some point, not during this incident.
Right. But there was no blood found on the bat, is that correct?
Correct.
But would that be able to be told from DNA?
There was nothing that was visible that could see, like if blood dries or anything like that. There was nothing that would indicate that here's a spot we need to test for that particular, for blood.
Right, but would DNA tell if there was blood? Could they find out if there was blood on the bat from the DNA test?
Once again, blood is, you would see if it dries and crusts, then you would see that particular blood. DNA comes in many forms. It can come in touch, it can come in sweat, blood, but you would think that blood would be visible at that point to be able to test. And we did not see anything like that.
Okay, so if there was none of Alex's DNA on the blood, wouldn't that tell us something? I mean, on the bat at all, then wouldn't that tell us something?
If there were none of Alex's, it would just mean that Alex never touched that bat at any time.
And wouldn't it tell us that Alex was never hit in the head with that bat?
Once again, it's not specific. I can't, if there was blood on the bat, then yes, that would, we would test for that. But there's no visible blood on the bat.
I understand that. But when you're doing an investigation, are you not trying to figure out what happened?
Yes, and that's what
we did. Don't you want all the information to do that?
Yes.
And so whose responsibility would it be to request the DNA testing from the swab that was taken?
Once again, that would just show, it's not showing that it's blood. There's no blood on the bat. It was just showing that a DNA swab was taken of that particular area to be able to test later on. But there's no discoloration that would show any kind of blood.
And who in the Chandler Police Department would be requesting that DNA to be tested? Who would have to do that?
That'd be me. As the new case agent, that would be me, or Detective Moffitt at the beginning.
And so Detective Moffitt never did that, is that correct?
Correct.
And you never did that, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.